The Supreme Court vacancy is our topic. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and our guest is a Heritage Legal Fellow, Zach Smith. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. You're on the air.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Sure. And just before we get into the issue and maybe the fireworks that are forthcoming, and by the way, just to timestamp this is being pre-recorded for future air, and this is on September 24th, 2020, in the afternoon. And so before we get into the meat of the issue, just tell me a little bit about your background. Did you ever clerk for anybody and so forth?
Sure. Well, I went to University of Florida for undergrad law school, go Gators. Uh-huh. And after law school, I clerked for a federal judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. After that, I worked at a large law firm for a couple of years and then served as a federal prosecutor and assistant United States attorney in the Northern District of Florida before joining Heritage Foundation. So I've had an opportunity to read some of the opinions by several of the leading contenders for the Supreme Court seat and do a little bit of research into their backgrounds.
And why did you choose to go to Heritage, which is a great organization, but just tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I really enjoy practicing law, you know, as an assistant U.S. attorney, getting to go to court, represent the interests of the United States, prosecute federal offenses, represent the government in civil matters as well. But, you know, Heritage, I agree, is a great organization. It's been fascinating to be on the policy side of things for a little while now. And I really, you know, obviously I agree with the work that Heritage does. And I think Heritage puts out a lot of fantastic information and resources that all of us can use as we try to learn more about our system of government.
Okay. This particular slice of time is the calm before the storm. Within the next couple of weeks, we may see, you know, a large firestorm, you know, in the Senate building when they're having the, you know, the Senate judiciary hearings, the various right. You know, wherever they have those hearings. Usually, by the way, those hearings are, it's a, kind of a subset of the U.S. Capitol, of course.
Right, right. Well, if this is the calm before the storm, that should terrify all of us.
Why? There's already fireworks?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we already hear a lot of Democratic lawmakers saying they're not going to support the president's nominee, regardless of who it is, regardless of how qualified the nominee is. And unfortunately, they're really floating some unprecedented ideas if the president's nominee is confirmed. You know, they've said they will potentially pack the court by expanding the number of justices who sit on the Supreme Court. There's also talk about eliminating the legislative filibuster and even potentially trying to add D.C. or Puerto Rico or some other territories as states so that presumably the number of Democratic senators could increase. And all of that combines really to create an unprecedented atmosphere, a toxic atmosphere that really could, unfortunately, be leading us into uncharted waters in a lot of ways.
Yeah, some of the phrases I've heard, burn it down, tear it down, blow it up. And these are from right. News media officials, you know, from various outlets like CNN. It's crazy.
Right. It really is. And look, I think it's important to focus on a couple of points about the president's role in making nominations. You know, the president not only has the right to nominate someone to fill the Supreme Court vacancy, he has the duty to do so. And just like the president has the duty to make a nomination, the Senate has a duty to give their advice and consent. And they can either give their consent and confirm the nominee to be a justice on the Supreme Court, or they can withhold their consent and vote against the president's nominee or withhold the consent in some other way. And so what we've seen is President Trump and Mitch McConnell both committing to not only do what they have a right to do, but frankly committing to simply do their duty and have the Senate consider the president's nominee.
Do you think abortion as an issue, since abortion was imposed upon the country through judicial fiat, through Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, companion decisions the same day, do you think that is a factor in the fireworks?
100%. 100%. And, you know, there, President Trump's committed to naming a female judge or a female individual to the vacancy on the Supreme Court. And he said there's about five names he's considering from his larger, you know, 40-name or so list. And the two top contenders we've heard so far are Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who sits on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and Judge Barbara Lagoa, who's from Florida and sits on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And Judge Barrett's confirmation hearing for her current judgeship was very contentious, very inappropriate in a lot of ways, I think. And the questioning she faced, especially from senators like Dianne Feinstein, focused largely on her Catholic faith and whether or not her Catholic faith would impact her decisions, how so. And the undertone to all of that was essentially whether she would be a vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. But I think Judge Barrett handled it well and made clear and has made clear since she's been on the bench, she's a constitutionally conservative judge who interprets the Constitution and the laws as they're written and doesn't just, you know, create law out of whole cloth or impose her will on us as the American people through judicial fiat.
Okay, now, would you say that the Republicans have the vote in this particular, you know, case, even before, of course, the, you know, the election?
Well, the situation's fluid, and if 2020 has taught me anything, it's not to make too many predictions okay. about what lays in the future.
True.
But right now, fortunately, it does look like Mitch McConnell has the votes to certainly consider the nominee and hopefully to confirm the nominee as well. Right now, you know, Susan Collins has come out saying she would not be in favor of confirming the nominee. Lisa Murkowski came out and said she didn't want to consider a nominee, but since the process is moving forward, she may be open to voting for the president's nominee. And so it's a fluid situation. Things on the ground are still changing, but it does look like Mitch McConnell has the votes he needs right now.
Huh. You know, it's interesting. Let's go back to the religion question for a moment, because it does seem as if the left has a terrible double standard. If somebody is of some sort of minority religion, it would be bigoted and terrible to question them or belittle them or, you know, say things like Dianne Feinstein said to Amy Coney Barrett a few years ago. But if they're
right.
Catholic and they're evangelical, if they're one of those two, you know, then they're fair game, it seems.
Right. And it's an inappropriate double standard, and it's inappropriate in a lot of ways to criticize someone for their sincerely held religious beliefs. You know, Senator Dianne Feinstein told Amy Coney Barrett at her confirmation hearing, you know, quote, "the dogma lives loudly within you." And phrases like that are inappropriate. They're toxic in a lot of ways. And I think Judge Barrett, again, has shown herself to be nothing but a competent, highly qualified jurist since she's taken the bench. And the problem is we've repeatedly seen these ad hominem attacks against Supreme Court nominees, you know, really going back to Robert Bork's nomination in the 1980s. And unfortunately, I anticipate we're going to see more of the same this time. But all of the president's nominees on his list are well qualified and would make great additions to the Supreme Court.
The Constitution, let's focus a little more on this religion point. The Constitution says there should be no religious test for those who serve in federal government. In effect, people like Dianne Feinstein or Bernie Sanders, because they've raked evangelicals or Catholics over the coals, you know, Trump nominees, because of religion, in effect, they have imposed a type of religious test. Basically, you got to be secular, or maybe you can be Jewish and Muslim, but you can't be Christian and committed to your Christian faith, you know, in a conservative way, or then you're fair game to us.
Well, and I think that's troubling in a lot of ways, that people are really casting aspersions on potential nominees or their sincerely held religious beliefs, the faith that they and their family practice on a daily basis. And again, you know, of course someone's faith will impact their worldview, their outlook on life. But Judge Barrett made clear in her confirmation hearing and has made clear since she's been on the bench, that she interprets the Constitution and the laws that are written and on the books. And that's exactly what she's done. And more importantly, you know, if we can go back to the Roe v. Wade debate for a minute, you know, one of the issues that comes up is whether a new nominee to the Supreme Court would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. And really, the legal point to that is the value of Roe as a legal precedent, whether it was correctly decided on legal grounds, you know, setting aside the morality of it, which, you know, I would certainly agree that abortion is one of the biggest issues we face in our country today. But setting that aside, there are well-founded legal arguments for why Roe was wrongly decided. And Judge Barrett's written on that extensively. Other judges have written and commented on that extensively. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg conceded that the legal foundations of Roe v. Wade were problematic in several important ways. Hmm. And so, you know, certainly Ruth Bader Ginsburg wouldn't be classified as a pro-life judge by any means. But so to attack Judge Barrett for legal arguments she's made in the past, scholarly papers she's written, and attribute those in some way to being influenced by dogma or anything like that is just unfortunate and frankly inappropriate.
Yeah, you know, I remember reading word for word many, many years ago, one of those Bob Woodward books, which he wrote with a different co-author, but different than Carl Bernstein. But it was about the Berger Court, the Warren Berger Court. And one of the things that struck me that relates to Roe v. Wade is that while Warren Berger did vote for Roe v. Wade, 7-2, so he was one of the seven. Here's the Chief Justice at the time that voted for Roe v. Wade. Within a couple years, and I can't even remember what the decision was. It certainly wasn't the Casey, because that was in the 80s. Anyway, he voted against Roe v. Wade. So in other words, in effect, the whole issue came up again. I think he was maybe surprised that the decision, you know, resulted in all these, you know, abortions all over the place, you know, just an explosion of abortions. And then maybe some of the blowback from the fact that this was such a poorly written decision. I mean, Robert Bork was just merciless towards the
right.
Poor legal reasoning of Roe v. Wade. And I just think that point is a good one, that no, it was a bad decision as far as, you know, even if you like the, you know, the result, it was a bad judicial decision.
Right. And I think if we step back to kind of the 40,000 foot level, you know, Roe v. Wade, the debate around that really points to a larger issue we've had in our country. And it's that judges have been stepping outside of their lane and essentially legislating from the bench, imposing their preferred policy preferences on us as Americans, when really those decisions should be made by our elected branches of government, the president and Congress. And so what Judge Lagoa has made clear, Judge Barrett's made clear, really all of the individuals on President Trump's list have made clear, is they're committed to keeping the judges and judiciary in their appropriate lane and interpreting the laws based on the text of the Constitution, based on the text of the laws passed by Congress, and not just making up new laws out of whole cloth and imposing their policy preferences from the bench.
Excellent. Okay, we have 1 minute left. John Roberts. John Roberts got in, and I remember the left was just hammering him away at him and so forth. And now he's just sort of seems to be drifting to the left, certainly this last court season. Your thoughts?
Well, look, you know, I can only speculate as to what John Roberts' rationale is. There were several disappointing decisions coming from the Chief Justice this past term. Hopefully, you know, he's looking at the law, basing his decisions on the law, and not taking into account any political considerations or trying to protect the court as an institution. Because my thought would be, if he's doing that, it's really counterproductive and, in fact, is making the Supreme Court more political when it should be less political.
Or, as some people have put it, he just wants to make sure he gets invited to the right cocktail parties. I mean, honestly, I mean, these are just human beings. So, so Zach Smith, thanks so much for being with us. Heritage.org for more information. All the best, Zach. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.